Welcome to another episode of The Corner Booth, the official podcast of RestaurantOwner.com. Today, the restaurant industry is changing faster than ever. Learn from successful independent restaurant operators and other industry leaders as they share best practices that will help you engage your team, delight your guests, and grow your business.
And welcome everyone again to another episode of Corner Booth. I'm Chris Tripoli with RestaurantOwner.com. And I'm so excited about today because there's a hot new concept. Some of you might be following it. It's making some noise, growing through franchising. We are grabbing life by the biscuit today with Biscuit Belly. I want to introduce you to Hannah McLean. She's the director of Culinary, the director of training, and she's doing all the store openings. So Hannah, welcome to Corner Booth.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I mean it. This is going to be a lot of fun for me because although there are no Biscuit Bellies in my immediate area, I have been following you with great interest. I mean, anytime you can read a menu and you hear things like fire in your belly, boozy bird, I mean, Biscuit Benny. Okay, I'm in. I got to hear more about this.
Yeah, so our menu is really diverse. We are a chef-driven concept. So at the core of it, we like to have fun menu offerings. We were founded in 2019 in Louisville, Kentucky, by our owners, Chad and Lauren Coulter, who had had another successful restaurant concept in Louisville, and that was more in the dinner scene. And they really wanted to bring some of their hometown, Georgia, Big Biscuits, to Louisville.
Nice.
So that is how the concept came to be. And I myself started about a month, a couple weeks to a month after we opened. And I started actually as just a prep cook, just like you. I had heard the buzz and I wanted to know more about Biscuit Belly.
Let's do that. Before we get too much into Biscuit Belly, let's go ahead and start with you. You're very interesting. Tell me about how Hannah got involved in restaurants. And obviously you got connected with this right when they started. That's great. But before that, what got you interested in this type of business?
So I never really lived my life growing up with the idea of I'm going to be a chef. But my family is very food driven. So I have an uncle who is a chef. And I remember at a young age watching him do a lobster boil, you know, and being so interested in that. I have a grandmother who lived through the Depression era. And so she was a very from scratch, no waste type of lady. And I grew up in her kitchen. I have a mom who is a baker. And we baked every holiday. And so food has always been a part of my life. I grew up in a church. And so I was always doing soup kitchens or helping cook for the community there. As it came to be time to think about a job, I was working counter service at Panera Bread. And it was thinking about college, thinking about just staying in a career. Well, I had decided to go to college for communications and 2 months in, said, nope, this is not for me. And really, the choice came down to I enjoyed working in a restaurant more than going to school. And so that is how my journey began.
Well, there you go. And, you know, we have a lot of listeners out there that I think can identify with that. This is another great story of somebody following a passion. That's what I'm hearing, you know, from working around the house, whether it was an uncle lobster boil, whether it was baking with mom, that was your interest. Trying out something else to maybe learn other things. College didn't seem to work. And so I just think that that's wonderful when you can just grab onto what it is you're really interested in.
Yeah. Okay,
now go work. Now go be as successful as you can at it. Good for you.
Thank you.
Okay. So then, back to Louisville and the home of the Bonuts, Biscuit Belly. They started with one unit. You were there when they're only 2 weeks old. So this is great. Tell us a little bit about the ground floor, you know, maybe the initial concept, the type of customers you were serving. How big is the store, by the way?
That's a good question. I actually don't know exact square feet. Unfortunately, I did not do my homework on that. But it is our first location is a rented unit. It is a full building that on the first floor has one, two, three different offices and a restroom area. So we have about a third of the bottom floor. Our kitchen is very small initially. Like I said, we started build out when the concept was getting built. Chad and Lauren Coulter had like a more fine dining restaurant. So the first kitchen was built more like what you would see in a full service kitchen. So a little more spread apart, less intentional with some of the spacing, just because I don't think anybody knew Biscuit Belly would get the response that it did.
What a nice problem to have.
Exactly.
Busier than you first thought. So do you serve people counter service or is this table service with servers?
So it is a QSR model. So everybody comes up to the register to physically order and then we deliver the food. So we deliver food and drinks. But as far as the ordering, we don't technically have servers. We have cashiers and support team members.
And are the hours like strong breakfast, lunch, or are you open for dinner too?
Sure. So we are just at breakfast and lunch. We are open from 7:30 until 2, Monday through Thursday. And then we do stay open till 3, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Definitely breakfast and lunch.
Okay. Now, can you tell us a little bit about this menu? Because I've told people, you know, to go to the website and check it out. I've seen the pictures. I love the names. How did you guys come up with this chef twist on biscuit sandwiches?
Yeah, so initially from the fine dining concept, there was an executive chef there named Chef Tavis Rockwell. And he, with Chad, Chad kind of is a very much a dreamer, very much, you know, and a founder. And so he had a lot of visions, visionary, that's the word. He is a visionary. So he had a lot of visions about the menu and Tavis kind of put his spin on the initial rendition of the menu. We tried to not only advertise things that are Louisville or Kentucky driven. So we use a lot of products that are maybe the flour is milled in Kentucky or the farm is central to Kentucky. We also, for example, a hot brown that is a Louisville staple. And so we wanted to put our rendition of a hot brown biscuits and gravy on there. Really, more than anything, people eat with their eyes first. So when I came on, not only did I further develop the flavor profiles for new items, I really helped fine tune our plating, which I bring that up because we are incredibly intentional about how we plate. The phone eats first at Biscuit Belly. So, you know, the phone comes out, takes a picture, and then the person eats. And as far as flavor profile, we really tried to be unique. We don't want to be like everyone else. You know, I think we do want to be like the business model that works. But as far as, you know, the creativity, there's not a lot of concepts doing three different gravies,
right.
Seven sauces.
Yes.
Proteins, you know, it's unique.
And all based on, you know, unique presented biscuit sandwiches. Are in a, being a small counter service, fast casual model, you are in a very, very popular segment. But you're right, you have what a lot of people in the industry call a point of difference. And making a menu out of biscuit sandwiches is a significant difference. And then, of course, with these ingredients, as you're talking, and the higher emphasis on plating presentation. You're definitely driving home some differences. That's good for you. Can you tell us a little bit about the price range that these, that you're, and the more popular items, what are they?
Yeah, as far as what we sell it for?
Yeah,
So
like what's
your
a menu?
average food check is with a drink is anywhere between $22 and $25. Our most expensive item is called the Belly Buster that has every single meat on it and an egg and gravy. And that is $19.50. Amazingly enough, that does not deter people from ordering that menu item. It is
Well,
a
it's, yeah, I could. I mean, I remember the picture. I mean, it's a big deal. But you
Yeah.
also have, say, smaller and lesser priced items, for those who might want.
Correct. Yeah, so we have actually just introduced a couple newer items that are a little more cost effective. So we have all of our appetizers, which can be treated as a meal. Those are about $9 or under. But we also have main entrees such as avocado toast, French toast, praline parfait. That runs between $8 and $10.
Good.
And then we've got an extra, sides that can be add on that are either $2.99 or $3.99. So we do have bigger price point items, and then we have smaller ones that we try to group together and upsell so that we can reach a higher dollar amount.
Good job. Can you tell me about the bonuts? Okay, we just have to spend a little bit more time on the menu. The bonuts look wonderful. How do you do a little? Is that a biscuit donut with some kind of a sweet dip, or is it something else?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you've ever made biscuits at home, once you punch out your biscuits, you've got scraps left over. You're not doing squares, you're doing circles, and you're cutting circles out of big rectangles. So we were really trying to figure out how are we going to utilize this extra 3 to 5 pounds of dough that we end with. And so what we do is we take those scraps, we roll it back up, and we get a little tiny biscuit cutter that's about like an inch in diameter, really small, and we punch those out. And so that not only allows us to utilize some of what would be waste, it also, to your point, not a lot of people have mini biscuits or biscuit donuts on their menu. So the biscuit donuts get tossed in a cinnamon sugar. And then we also bake mini biscuits and utilize those as a Bloody Mary garnish. As well as we have a menu offering called a gravy train, which is a sampling of our gravies, and we serve it with a basket of mini biscuits.
Okay, so just to kind of complete the concept, everyone gets a pretty good picture. Counter service, breakfast, lunch, very inventive. And then you mentioned Bloody Mary. So do you have a full service alcohol?
Yep, so we have an alcohol license, we have breakfast cocktails. As well as you can get, just a shot of something if you're really feeling it. Mimosas, top shelf mimosas. We even have a franchisee that offers beer. So, dependent on the market, we as corporate are open to having those conversations.
Okay, well, you mentioned the franchise word. So we got this started in 2019. And so very quickly, I guess over the next couple of years, you guys hit expansion. Did you start developing corporate stores first? Can you tell me a little bit about where they are? Then let's talk about your franchise model.
Yeah, absolutely. So within 4 months of opening the first location, we started scoping out the second. The first was opened in early June. The second was open in like November, late November, right before COVID. After the response of our second, the idea of franchising came about. I think we were still doing some research. We were still trying to figure out, what that meant for us. And then COVID happened. And we had two stores open, one in the works, all corporate. And myself, the leadership, and three other people held on to their jobs. And during that time, I call it kind of the blessing in disguise for Biscuit Belly. Because we developed a to-go program. We had no difference between for here to go. We didn't do Uber Eats. We didn't do DoorDash. We didn't do any of that. And now to this day, we're sustaining, I think, about 30% in to-goes. 30% of our sales are in to-goes. So we were able to really develop that, as well as just general schematics. What is, you know, the proper amount of gravy to go on this item? What is the plating for this item? And so during COVID is really our first run of tools for the brand.
Okay. Time when all concepts have to grab that, don't they? And develop mm-hmm. systems in order to maintain the consistency that you're looking at if you're multi-unit. So yeah. That's good. So now you've got, you know, a couple of more corporate units out there. You've increased mm-hmm. your pickup, your delivery. And then when and where did your very first franchise store open?
Yeah, absolutely. So in February of 2021, we opened our first franchise location in Lexington, Kentucky. So we went just about an hour and a half down the road. We kept it kind of nearby so that our first franchisees could get the support from our corporate team while we are still small. And then in 2021, August, September, we went to Ackworth, Georgia.
And franchise number two in another state.
Yes. Or was that 22? My years kind of blur together. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
But this year alone, we have opened, including the one that we're getting ready to open next week, we have opened three franchise and one joint venture this year.
Very good. This is some quick-fired growth. So I'd like yes. to really talk about sometimes the challenges that growth brings. Now, you already touched on one, which was good, that you developed time to make sure that programs, process, procedures, consistency, portions, you know, all got set up. But how about to some of the listeners who are concerned with their own growth and finding people, training people? Were you guys able to, keep up? Is the labor market tight, or are you able to find, train, you know, and keep all the staff that you need?
So I think we've been very blessed in the labor market, to be all the way honest with you. Our corporate team also has been intentional about investing in what we call intellectual capital. So we like to have people on our team that are maybe even smarter than us. We are investing in knowledge because we, you know, all want to grow this thing. As far as a store level, the last opening that we had in Chesapeake, Virginia, my manager combed through 260 different interviews to build her team. Because of that,
to open one store,
she interviewed and went through about 250 or 60 people to get a team of about, I want to say, 35. Since we left 6-7 months ago, she's lost maybe 5 of those people.
There you go.
What we have found is if you put in the work up front and really understand what it is you need from a culture perspective, from a skill perspective, from a scheduling perspective, and you put in that work before the store is open, then it makes it easier once the store is open to maintain, because we always expect people to fall off in a new store opening. But if it's 5 out of 40 and I really only need 30 to get by, we're in great shape.
That's the wonderful, wonderful goal is the retention. Gosh, I hope people are making note of that. It does take some time, but it looks like what you've done here is you've developed this right person for the right spot mentality. Yes. You're not just looking for people who want a job. They come, they go. You're looking for right people for the right spot. That's the reason why so few leave. Good for you.
Yeah. And we have, you know, in our time in learning, we've had a complete turn of a store. You know, we have through our history had maybe a manager who left or a team member who left, and it became a trickle effect. But we learned very early on, you know, what that meant and what kind of work our corporate team then had to put back in. And so we began to be a lot more intentional with hiring. We like to ask ourselves, do they get it? Do they want it? And is there a capacity to do it? And so that's kind of three questions that not only we ask about our managers, but we ask about our team members.
That's a good one. Yeah, sounds like you're putting the emphasis in the right spot. It's a people process after all. It doesn't take us very long here on Corner Booth to talk to people who are successfully growing a brand to get to that point. You know, we're sure we want to talk about the menu, the taste, the funny names, et cetera, but it doesn't take very long to get around to the point that you got to start with people. Congratulations on your off to the races here, your quick start with openings, both company and franchise stores. That's a little difficult. And when you're doing them in the same couple of year period. So that's wonderful. I like that. Do they get it? Do they want to do it? And what's the third one?
And do they have the capacity to do it? So are there any outside forces, personal issues, you know, can they handle what is getting ready to be asked of them?
There you go. Three good qualities to get positive answers for if you're building a good team. Okay, so now here's a good question for you. You've been building a team both ways, opening corporate stores, opening franchise stores. I think there's a lot of people that may be listening who are teasing with the idea of growing through franchising. So maybe you could tell them, since you've been doing it both ways, what is the difference in preparing, say, to open a store for a franchisee, the franchisee selection, because these aren't people you hire. These are people who are buying in pretty much. What kind of support, how long does it take to train the key franchisee? What kind of support is, you know, required when you go on site to help them open? But yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit about that process and how it might be different from the company growth.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of dual fold. So the first layer to that is when our franchisee group is getting ready to open a store, their first task is to obviously find their managers. I've got some store that have two managers and some stores that have one with hourly, you know, shift leaders. And that is just up to whatever hierarchy they so choose. Once management is hired, management will come to Louisville and be trained between our home stores in Louisville, leave 3 or 4 weeks. They will essentially get trained in every single position and then have about a week of mock managing one of our locations. Once they are done with that, they then go back to their location with a huge checklist that we have provided them about what is needed before the training team arrives to them. That includes hiring, ordering, equipment, store readiness, you know, all of the above. The trainers come to the store a week and a half before opening day. We spend 2 days of like pre-training. So we cross our T's and dot our I's, make sure everything is as it should be, not only with our team, but with the franchise team. Then we spend 4 days training, 2 days after training of mock practice, or we call it friends and family. So we have a day where we offer the community signups. They come in to their time slots. We give them a true bell-shaped curve of service. We do offer free food. So it is our first introduction to the community, sign up only. And it gives the line some genuine practice. So that's a total of 6 days. Then we close after the sixth day. And then the day after we close, we're open and we don't close again. Trainers stay anywhere between 10 and 18 days to support franchisees. And we have one trainer per station, basically. So we'll have four back of house trainers and three front of house trainers. not all of those will stay the 18 days. You know, they will all stay at least the first seven, and then we'll choose one front and one back to stay and essentially just be the follow-up and really continue it to be the manager's support, because at that point, it's the manager's show, and we're just supporting them and their team members.
I get it. Good plan. Time to train, time for quality product, and the time for connection to community. What a great way to practice. Why not practice on future customers? They eat for free. They get a sneak peek. They like it. And you get what you need, which is the practice. Are there any supply challenges with this concept, or are you A-OK with getting what you need, you know, the type of quality of product that you need in the states that you're looking at for growth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So 2021 was our roughest year, obviously, for supply. We had the bacon gate scandal, so we couldn't get our hands on bacon. We had a chicken scandal. We had, you know, egg prices increase dramatically. In the last year, I will say it is less challenging to find our items. What I find more challenging as we're growing is we do have one purveyor, so we use PFG, or Performant Food Service Group.
Sure.
However, because of where we're located, I've got three different opcos. And as we grow, I could have six, seven, eight different opcos. And what that means is currently I have an opco is basically a distributing point.
Right.
So right now I have three different food reps to work with, three different buyers to work with, and while things may be packaged under four different packaging item labels, it's the same actual product. So that for me becomes my challenge of I can see a brand that says Tyson Wright, and it's, you know, whatever your basic brand West Creek is or whatever. But that could all be the same chicken. It's just all packaged under different labels. So that becomes harder for me personally to chase as we get bigger.
Sure. Do you see as a possibility some of your product, whether it's maybe a marinade, maybe it's seasoning, maybe it's the actual gravy mix, something that you feel is brandable, sold in the stores, maybe someday on retail shelves, or is that, you know, maybe something that's down the road for Biscuit Belly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have at least three recipes that I would love to see bottled and sold for service. We currently aren't there just yet. It is a thought in everybody's head. But we do currently work with two different food groups who actually make our recipes for us. So we have some prep that is our recipe is from scratch, but it is done obviously in an offsite facility. And that has allowed us operationally to be a lot more excellent.
So are these like small product kitchens that you can, because that's a good question that comes up a lot where people are just beginning to grow. You know, they might have a half a dozen units. So they're told that they're not moving the volume yet to go to a larger a production kitchen, you know, that does tremendous amount of sauces and, you know, and gravies and can do cryovac, freezing, canning of your product. So are there companies out there that are able to take you, you know, when you are doing smaller volume and still do that recipe production for you?
Yes, there are. They are also smaller companies. So the two that we work with, one is local to Louisville. They actually have an insane production there, but it is local to Louisville, like I say. And the second is actually local to Nashville. So they are smaller people. We do pay obviously a little bit more for that product than we would once we get to 30 locations, because we don't have the buying power that we will eventually.
Sure.
So we did have to have those discussions, but what we found is we were saving on food waste. We were saving on recipe error. We were saving costs and inconsistency amongst these products, to where maybe the added 50 cents of freight or whatever it may be was worth it to us. So yes, there are possibilities out there. You just have to look at it a little bigger than just what it is maybe cost from scratch versus what it costs getting made. Think about all of the other variable costs that could be encompassing that from scratch cost, if that makes
sense.
Well,
that's good advice. No, that's good advice. I just want to take a quick minute to underline that. A lot of listeners that are, you know, working with product cost, and obviously we understand that, and working with supply and wanting to manage food costs correctly. And then sometimes, however, if we look at the total, what I'm hearing you say is, if you'll step back and take a look at your total production cost, which means the value of consistency, less waste, savings of labor, that
Correct.
Might calculate in, as I understand you, and it might, you know, show that it's on an overall basis much better to pay slightly more for the food prep when you win in those other two categories. Good for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this has been exciting. I've enjoyed every moment that we've talked about. I can't let you go without talking about next steps. You've had a very, very quick couple of years. What do you see next for you and your team there at Biscuit Belly?
Yeah, so right now we are actually going to start a training tomorrow in our second Lexington Franchise Group locations. So we have that to get out of the way. And then early next year, we will have between 2 and 3 locations, between a joint venture as well as another franchise group. And we hope to just continue to expand. Next steps for the team would be to continue to expand our training team and to continue to grow our bench of people, so that as we anticipate next year, there could be 2 openings at the same time. So this one training team has to split in half. So we are just trying to stay 6 to 8 months ahead of what we're planning, because that 6 to 8 months comes up quick.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And then for me, what's next for me personally, I have just fallen head over heels in love with innovation, recipe development, I do a lot of testing for different products. And so I hope to continue to grow in that and potentially even get a couple mentors along the way of other chefs or other director of culinaries, to kind of build, I guess, what you would call my board of directors, my support outside of just Biscuit Belly, because, of course, I have tons of that here.
I think that's fantastic. That's fantastic. You're in a good place, but always looking for continued improvement, always looking to grow. This is a perfect example of making a career out of a passion, and now you're making the most of it. I'm real proud of you. Good for you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody, you've been listening to Hannah McLean, and she is on the road for success. She's doing great at Biscuit Belly. Please look them up. And if you're ever in the Georgia, or if you're in the Kentucky area, go get yourself a Boozy Bird. Don't forget to save room for the Bonuts. I wish I could. Hannah, Biscuit Belly sounds like it's fantastic. You're doing well. Thank you so much for taking this time joining us here on Corner Booth.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And to everyone else, we hope you have a really good rest of the day. And please join us again when we have another episode of Corner Booth real soon. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Corner Booth. We'll be back next Tuesday with more inspiration, insights, and industry best practices to help you engage your team, delight your guests, and grow your business.